This program is brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you hear, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.
Just sort of speak into it for a minute. Just talk in your
mouth. Yeah, yeah. All right.
Should be okay. So this is I'm recording for the first program of Wavelength. What is it today? Is it the 5th of September?
Yeah.
So it's the 5th of September.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in Marcus Campbell Art Bookshop, the bookshop near the Tate Modern. And
opposite.
I'm about to have, I'm having a portrait done by Bob Parks. The distinguished performance artist who's just setting up at the moment. We've got, I'm sitting in the window, so we might attract a bit of attention, I suppose. People might come along and say what the
top of penny
going
in the hat.
There. And, Bob is very dapper today in his
Rhythm and Blues shirt. It's lemon yellow, yeah, it's made especially.
Right.
Yeah, lemon yellow and maroon, they're the colours.
But the jacket is lemon yellow, isn't it? The jacket is lime yellow or something. You've got a touch of blue in your hair.
Hi.
Is that intentional?
No. I don't know where that came from.
Mildew.
I haven't washed it for 3 months. It seems to work. So maybe it's nothing to do with that. But it's, yeah.
So you've got quite a lot of white hair at the moment. And,
it's half in the blue bit, right?
There's a touch of blue in it, which looks
it's like a blue wash for old ladies. Not like that, is it?
No.
Very good.
So you're getting set up. You've got a whole array of brushes there.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a watercolour.
Yeah.
On what is it?
A1 watercolour paper.
A1 watercolour paper. Do you want me to come closer or?
Yeah, if you can, that'd be great, man. You won't be able to get it. If you need to go to the toilet quickly, you.
Yeah, no, I can probably hold on.
As close as you can, because that way I can see you.
Oh, okay.
We don't want to get too.
We've locked the door of the shop, so nobody else can come.
Okay. Is there another jam jar or something that I can put the brushes in like that? It doesn't matter if you have this up. Okay.
I'm a bit trapped.
No, don't worry.
I could have got you one.
No.
Or if you want to go and get yourself.
Yeah, where?
I can direct you. If you put your board down. If you go right behind the counter to where the sink is.
Okay.
You might see. Something. You'll see a utensil there because I'm sort of trapped now by the various tables and things. Go all the way around. Keep going through and around to your right, and you'll see a sink ahead of you.
Oh yeah, that's good.
You could empty if you see one of those beer glasses. You could empty one of those if you want.
Great. I've got some water in it too.
Yeah. So I'm looking across the Tate Modern. Yesterday there was a huge demonstration there.
Who by? Oh, the staff, right?
The staff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's 400 being. Laid off at the South Bank. My job's pretty much certain to go.
Is it?
Mm.
Are you furloughed at the moment?
Well, I guess, yeah.
You don't know? Aren't you getting money, though? I mean, you must be...
Yeah, I suppose I spend £100 a month, though.
Okay.
Which is helpful.
Right. But, so you think your job might be at risk?
I pretty much know it will be.
Really?
It's high risk and front of house.
Yeah.
Well, we had a bloody a directive from the... They've made this deal with the union. I thought because I was on 0 hours, it'd be cheaper, so they don't have to pay the leaving fees.
Yeah.
You know, payoff if they keep me on without paying me because they don't have to pay anything. And I'd be happy. It's not, I mean, I'm doing it not because I want money for it. It's, you know, it nearly pays my train fare up. Free admission to the galleries.
Okay.
40% of the food there. So it's, and the place to dump stuff in London. So
yeah, yeah.
It's like, money couldn't buy it, you know.
Right.
But,
yeah.
So there it goes, man. And,
So you've got a whole, you've got a palette here, which looks like a piece of glass. Or is that perspex?
Perspex, yeah.
Perspex, that's your palette.
Yeah.
And, okay.
I've got to balance this now. Can you somehow, if I move that around here, that won't have that holding it up. So
right,
I kind of like that.
Okay.
I want a bit more space. Now, I'll work with
you
the
want
limitation.
Me to, I can move this back a bit.
No, that's not that. This is in the way of that. It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We just see how it goes then.
So this is a series of portraits you're doing? Or?
Yeah. It's an idea I've got. It's Gallery of Everything. That's my idea. I put it in there. Gallery of Everything is my gallery.
Yeah.
And it's Thudar, James.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm doing this as a prospective show because he said he wanted a show, so
right.
I've tried to take it smaller, and so I've got a few with encaustic on them, but they seem to be focusing now on watercolour because it seems to be enough, you know. I've been combining them.
So you've chosen to do a series of portraits then?
Yeah.
And I'm what? I'm number 10, you said?
No, if you count the crow and the dead squirrel, I guess
crow
you are.
Crow and dead squirrel, I see.
You're number 10.
I'm in that series.
In the pecking order, quite literally.
The crow and the squirrel. Yeah.
Dead crow, so. But you know what? You should know. Let's call it a blackbird.
Yeah.
Instead of a crow, a dead blackbird.
Yeah.
Do you know, are you there yet? No. Baudelaire.
Baudelaire.
You're still not there.
No.
Baudelaire saw a dead blackbird in the gutter and established what was called dead symbolism. It came out of that, he said, it's the idea of beauty and ugliness.
Oh.
And they're beautiful, the dead crows, because you know the fleece is sort of, it's not just, it's iridescent, it's quite complex.
Yeah.
Kind of colour. Colour? No. Complex kind of... Yeah, colour.
Right.
It's not just black, it's got like
loads of
overtones in it.
Right. Is it almost, it's sort of a bit like petrol almost, where it's got all those little all the colours in it.
Well, that was a big starting point with one of the sculptures when I was at art school. Not an art school. Yeah, it was an art school. Leicester.
I know. Yeah.
Pigott and all that. Spelt wrong then.
Lester Piggott, I know. Yeah. I've got a friend called David Lester as well. That's spelled
the right way.
That's L E I S T E R.
That's
another one.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's see if I've got all my colours. No, there's one missing. A couple. I haven't got violet. Well, hopefully I've got violet somewhere. Let's see if it's in here. What are you up to? Where was I?
You're talking about Baudelaire.
Baudelaire, yeah.
And the blackbird.
Out of that came Fleur de Mal. And
right.
You know, beauty and ugliness, and the lad himself, you know.
Right.
And that was it. This movie, you know, I can't go into the details because I don't know. I haven't talked to the guy, so I don't want to say too much. But remember the last one we had with the director was there,
the German
guy from Uruguay.
Oh, he said the meeting we had in the studio. Yes, Pablo.
Pablo.
Right.
And what's his name? Steve.
Yeah.
Stephen Mikolev.
Right.
Who was the... Well, he and Mark P were the original punk journalists. I mean, Blue.
Is it going to... Don't worry about talk. If you
no,
if
I don't
you need
talking.
To concentrate on your
yeah,
painting...
Right.
That's fine. You don't have to talk because I can always we can talk afterward. You might need to focus on the job at hand. So this is wavelength on resonance 104.4 FM, and I'm talking to Bob Parks. Where are you, Bob? You're in Sway in the New Forest. Is that right? Yeah.
But sitting on the floor in the bedroom.
Okay, and I'm in London. So we're talking to each other, and basically this is as a result of you came to the bookshop on Saturday, the 5th of September, to paint my portrait.
Yes, I did.
You did. And this is part of a series. You didn't just choose me, did you? You're doing a whole series of portraits.
Yeah, no, it's my brother actually, you know, like, he used to push me over when I was a little boy. I thought, well, he was saying, you know, what I'm doing is a commercial. And I think,
He said what?
Yeah, it's sort of starting off with... well, I've always wanted to do portraiture. When I was in America, in Los Angeles, before I came over here in... 82, I had 10 years out there. My brother in Australia had arranged with a gallery, a friend who had a connection with a gallery, to put a show of my work on. And they thought, well, why don't you do your church? It's about the gospel church I go to. And it worked out that it was much simpler to work for photographs. So I spent, $6,000 from, I don't know, I had it in the bank. But that paid for the big blocks, a dual, the best block place in Hollywood, actually. So I had great big paint, I took them all back with me to England, and then painted the show with 8 oil paintings and 32, I think, oil pastels, and working on in the evening and on during the daytime. And I forgot what I was talking about there. Can you remember?
Well, you said that your brother recently...
Oh, yeah.
I think your brother recently...
That's right.
Yeah.
Not commercial. And anyhow, we didn't sell... It's true, because they were portraits.
Yeah.
The Black Gospel Church. A decade, but made from an article, maybe for 52 years, actually, his article, said that probably Tom's point was that portraits don't really sell unless you commission, or unless you're Francis Bacon or... Lucian Freud, and then some of the investment
But that's not really your concern, is it? Are you actually wanting them to be commercial?
I think that's what they're going to say. In art, when we started out, it wasn't very nice. If you're in design or something like that, you're concerned about making money, but the thing that separates sort of fine art from graphics, if you like, is the fact that you do it to satisfy your own needs, really, and it's about discovering yourself. Yeah. I actually did quite some good things at Leicester when we were there with Harry Toobron and John Thompson, and they were sort of seminal educationalists at that time. John Thompson then went down to head Goldsmith and spawned the whole Brat Pack in the 70s, and that's when he left in 69.
Yeah.
And they left just to teach ourselves, so Becker reckons that training was the best sort of education you can get, really.
Yeah.
And that was the sort of where we all came from, that place in Leicester. And you're from Leicester too, so it's a Midlands place, sort of nondescript, but it was the most prosperous town in Europe, I think, in the 19th century. So it's got things going for it, I guess. But it's also good that it wasn't particularly... You didn't have to mix with people in it. You could get right into your art. So that's a good place to focus
on. But I remember when you were doing the portrait, I caught a glimpse of it, and it immediately put me in mind of Emil Nolde.
I said at the time, and I still hold that he's in art. It's one of the most wonderful things there is. Are his watercolours of flowers, and that's right from the sea as well, but particularly the ones of flowers.
Yeah.
And to be compared with that, it's like the highest praise anyone could give me. But I did carry on with it, didn't I? I got a sort of post-Nolde phase where it's maybe more representational. I'm not going to resolve it.
Having...
It's not about that. You know, it's about really...
When I look at...
Why I'm doing this project is, going back to the Los Angeles thing, was working for a photographer, which I really didn't like. But it was my only choice, because I had been, like, a year painting the show in LA, then sort of stranded. So better than I come back to England and work for a photographer, so I got sort of a... security. They took it out to Australia, but I forgot what I was talking about.
What I was going to say was when I looked at the portrait, it looks like it's almost like two faces sort of blended down the middle, because
yeah, it is a bit cubist.
Right.
It's a liberty to bring bits in coming out here and there, sort of thing. It's a cubist thing, I think.
Well, it looks like me down the left hand side, but the right.
Yeah, it's a lot like you, and if you sort of mask off the right a bit, it looks very much like you. But
the right hand side makes me look like a sort of follower of Charles Manson or something.
That's it. So it's got that. Yeah, exactly. I like that quality.
Okay.
Yeah. Well spotted.
But do you, are you...
I'll leave it open for that. I just did a self-portrait. I know, sorry, I sent it on to you, which is in that spirit. I got my friend, we've got a group, a conceptual, it's called the Rhythm of Blues Conceptual Group. The Rhythm of Blues Feeling Conceptual Group. And it's Chalk and it's Nathan. Now, Chalk has the only handmade shoe shop for men in London.
When you do the portraits, are you trying to capture the essence of the person, or what's your motivation with the thing?
With portraiture, sorts of stuff. And going with avant-garde, I think basically I'm actually relatively conservative in a sense. I mean, not in a big city, but maybe it's, although actually I was almost prompted to vote for, think about voting for the Conservatives. The local MP was the one who got the whip taken away from him because he opposed the trade deal that they're trying to cook up with America, to allow all this horrible food to come over and that sort of thing. So I thought, well, there's not much of a principle, but yeah, I didn't go through with it, but it sort of did cross my mind, but
right. So, but what is the reason for doing every time you do a portrait, you're doing a self portrait immediately after.
Yeah, I'm actually, that was Nikki did the village. She's a sculptress, and she did the village. She was actually up in Scotland before she came. She's a close friend of Alan Davey. So, we're both sort of high flyers in the village. She's moving up to in between Fifehorn Christian, maybe. He gives me a get out of jail free card. raised as a trans finite, and the outcast bird, and that's where this character emerges, and I don't know name now, and I've taken it on as a performance art project to try to repaint this. And what I'm doing is with Nicky and stuff, because he's, I've got a mate up in Ipswich, who I went up, he's runs a poetry society there, so we've been attending for 20 years the Opera Poetry Festival, and we did this really bizarre thing on the third night, I think on the Sunday, Saturday night, at the Cross Keys Hotel, and you know, I take all my clothes off or something like that, and these little performances things, so we sort of kind of set a tradition up. And you know, I've been going up for 3 or 4 months making this recording, and Nathaniel Mellon heard it, and he produced my first LP on a gatefold. And Dave Mansfield, hi Dave, is working on the centrepiece, which is I've got a group, Parks and the Recreationals, and then one of the guys is the other half of Swift and Glue, and it's Mark P. He's what's his name? Anyhow, he was school friends with Mark Perry in Deptford, and he got the sack, I think, after a year or two. But he did all the music criticisms for Swift and Glue. Yeah, he's part of it. He's a big Blakeian right now. They've got musicians, and it's like a collective of, I think, about 7, 8, or 9 of us. And so we're going to do a piece. And Dave's writing a bassist. Now, he's a Kraftwerk, a Krautrock enthusiast. And that's where his stuff is coming from. He's set a key, and that will be bookended by Nicky's piece, which, you know, it's going to be, you know, that's types of the money. And it's his idea is to have it come from nothing into something, and then from something back into nothing, which would work really well for the, you know, to sort of introduce it. And then the theme that Dave will be bringing in, we'll be jamming over it with the group, so it should be good. And then while I'm in character, we were going to do this just before the COVID thing, so we had to delay it, but it's good because I've been able to formalise it and put a lot more kind of work into it. But I want to say a little bit, you know, we touched on Emil Noel, that what I like it so much is his colour. And I told you, you know, when you were, I saw you, that to my mind, there's three colourists in art who work for Salt, but I wouldn't really rate anybody else. It's a horrible thing to say, so, but it's your own personal opinion. The other one's Ivan Richards, and the other one is Samuel Palmer. But not Samuel Palmer, I didn't say that.
No.
Eat your words.
Yeah.
George Sutts.
Okay.
And
that's interesting. He's usually. Hang on.
Batista doesn't make it, or certainly Figato doesn't. And Ravovich criticised Kandinsky because he said he didn't go through puberty if he went through Phobos, and that was a bad move. So he's eyeing that as well.
Yeah.
So I really rate Nelda as the colourist, because the colours read against each other.
That's
very rare in painting. I mean, they really do.
Yeah, it's interesting because in Leicester they have a little collection of German expressionist paintings, which they've got quite a large collection of Carl Schmidt Rottluff watercolours.
Schmidt Rottluff, yeah. I went to a conference on expressionism, and this guy had just come out with a Skira book or something like that on Schmidt Rottluff, and I thought I should have bought it there and then, because, you know, I don't have anything by him in my collection of art books, but he's great colour. I think he's the number one of the expressionists colour-wise.
Right.
De Bruyne.
Yeah. De Brucker.
De Brucker, yeah, De Brucker.
Right. So where do you think these...
The
portraits are going to go where? To some, is it the Gallery of Nowhere or something?
Oh, yeah.
Is that...
I don't know. Who knows? That's my idea.
Yeah.
Because James is working... Well, I don't know. It's all in negotiation, everything. Well, it's not even negotiation.
Okay.
It's not even conceptually. But that's the idea I've got to do on the show... not this autumn, well, not now, but next autumn.
Right.
You know, I should have a bunch of stuff ready.
Yeah.
I think he's
Yeah.
Because I was waiting for his translation to make it, I hadn't finished it because constituents about the rise of the anti-hero, the idea that you could, that something is significant, not on a universal level, but you can only say my opinion, it's great, and it became personal, you couldn't make these sweet things famous anymore. And George Fraser, he had invited me on to G.S. Fraser, who's a contemporary of Lawrence Durrell, actually, and he sort of screamed with envy because he had made it, and George had, he was there before George, what is it, the guy, the pirate guy, but took over the sort of Radio 3 poetry thing. He was doing it in the 50s, sort of the ICO, actually. Anyhow, George invited me onto his course, six-person seminar, MA course in modern English American literature. Because he said for me to jump through the academic, to establish a precedent for a whole bunch of sort of outsider people that are much more deserving of inclusion in this course, because they're actually creative stuff. And that's what George said. I didn't do it. I didn't jump through the academic hoops. I tried to, and did my best, but I ended up writing the first paper on Wallace Stevens. I rewrote the whole of his 800 pages over Christmas, 25 pages a night, and automatic writing, and selected one line and 25 for the paper, and made it this nice hors d'oeuvre. But where's the thing? What it was obviously on this course, he had to do a sort of basic entry examination, and George gave me Aristotle's Poetics as the basis. I plotted the most important thing, character, the second, third, the sort of affect of the character, and the least important is the mise en scène. And, being born in 47, and with pop music is our métier, so to speak, that's where we're coming from. We sort of define ourselves in those terms. In terms of pop music, it's basically the special effects that sells. There was appeal, the novelty of them. And then, a bit of the personality of the person, the star, like Elvis and all his. And then less of that is the actual person, and least of all is the plot, because no one's interested in what the song's about. And it sort of inverted the whole Aristotelian plot. And I'm using that. Rosalind Krauss said the underpinning of 20th century art, Western art here, is desublimation. And this is an idea that sublimation is where, for example, Louis Bourgeois goes over it. Giacometti did too, but Carl went over his foot, and he, instead of screaming out of pain, he took the pain aside and sort of released it on an existential piece of sculpture. And I forget what I'm talking about. excuse me for the cough. What was I talking about, William?
I thought we might have been homing in toward. I thought we were going towards Cambodia, but I'm not sure.
Okay, here we come. We're coming that way. It's right on the ball. Then we're going to swing around to that. That was something that Dudar picked up on. What's his name? Pablo Vejos. This, because that's what sold it to him. When I went to Paris in 65 for the first time, while at the Jewish School of Art by myself, I had two exciting experiences with paintings, one with a Cezanne, apples and oranges, and it on his face that it's like, it's a little, it's usually, it's Indo-Chinese art. It has both the sensuality of the Indian art, but also the conceptual quality of Chinese art. So it's combined the two. And it's not heavily sensual like Indian stuff is, but it's got a string in it, and it's got a sort of clarity of Greek sculpture. If you look at a Corona sculpture, you can see it's well conceived. So I was in the British Museum. No, I was in there's this Indian doctor who's I was staying at the same in a hotel in Paris when I went there. He was 65. He bumped into me in the British Museum, and I was doing a little drawing from a whatever it is, a little sculpture, a Corona sculpture. The stylized hair, you know, little circles with five lines around it, and it started to come out in three dimensions. But I think I was in Paris at this time, because I went to see the Rodin's Ancient Bronze, and then the Picasso's, not Picasso, Michelangelo's slave, one of those things. How do they work their way around form? It was sort of like empathy. And I realised that in this Cambodian stuff, there was a conscious understanding of the relationship of one or two dimensions. And it was like a mystery that started to unfold when G.S. Fraser, out of sort of, he's not getting anywhere near the academic, he's better get him to study syllogistic logic. So he sent me to Roger Gully in the logic philosophy department. I forgot the word. I didn't know about Aristotle, but that, you know, symbolic logic, and I went sort of 100 miles in the wrong direction. Roger Gully then told me, because I was interested in time and Cambodia, I was talking to him about it. He said, well, if you read, you might understand Newton, but if you read St. Augustine in the second book of his Confessions under Imagination, he defines past as memory, present as what you see, as future as what you feel. It's one, two, and three dimensions. And my hearing aid is beginning to squeak a bit. And you go to that, I'm having a lot of these this evening, aren't I?
Well,
I'm getting there to Cambodia, don't worry. Went back to the sculptures in Paris. I don't know what the time slot is, but I was looking at them with this in mind, and they started to move between dimensions. So it was a freaky thing, like one, two, or three dimensions. They were moving literally in front of my eyes. And then later, when I moved to LA, we'd gone up to, we had a little trip around Fred's Railway, and we stopped off at in San Jose, the Winchester Mystery House. And she defied all the spiritual list. It survived the 1902 earthquake. And anyhow, in the psychic bookshop, it talks about Angkor, the book on Angkor Wat. And actually, Advaithart talks about Angkor, the only place that's ever been built purely to art, in the history of the art period, pretty much. Now, it said that instead of being invaded by Thailand, that was what led to the demise of this world's history, they disappeared onto another plane of existence. So, armed with this, and then earlier, I had done Barrel from Del Banco, you know, the Roland set Barrel from Del Banco is still there, right on the corner there, a little bit further up, there was a naive Yugoslavian painting, but in the introductory book, there was a reference to the Vedic scriptures, and the idea that sound atoms comprise form in Indian science. So this, as Cambodia was a sort of where the 3rd century Indian civilization went, Southeast Asia, and established Southeast Asia, it's a sort of pure, this idea of time travel was for one of the places it came from, but this sound atoms comprise water. You go into a tantric trance, unusually. George, is going to bring it back, he's described it as one of the last romantic sourness, and Pol Pot was in the Sorbonne in the early 50s, studying phenomenology, and then the French communist party is pretty sour, so you've got all that back mixed in with phenomenology, and, you've got the Khmer Rouge, and it's a wonderful recipe to creating it. And I've got this other little story, I just said it was very good. When I went to Bangkok, every time we were trying to get to Angkor, I said, I got to Bangkok one time, and there's this American serviceman, and they're talking about homosexuality, all that is horrible. But the gallery owner in an art gallery was saying that Sihanouk is a swine, an idiot, a communist Islam, but he's a very good composer, he's an excellent composer. So there's this tradition, sort of anarchic, in Cambodia, of freakiness, basically. And I thought I wanted to live there, but and met Miriam in Leicester at a market. She'd done the world trip, Nepal, Morocco, Munich, Leicester. And she's from LA, so we moved out there. We're going to earn a lot of money so I can go live in Cambodia. All of us would, live there. This is the early 70s. We can't go there. There's a Khmer Rouge. I don't care. But anyhow, she left me after a year and a half. The marriage didn't work out. And that's a consequence, I say, after another 7, 8, 9 years. But, slightly better actually. Got well out of it. And one of the aspects of this film is the plot, you see. I think I can say these things because it's my side of it, which I don't think that thing. So you look at the parallel realities and Einstein and all that kind of stuff, and it's a scenario in this film is sort of making a story about your life. I mean, not using me, it's my persona, but not me. I could be any gender, actually, or any age, really. But it's the thrust of the life. And, thrust of the life. Here we are on the cusp of going, the storyline in the film is, I went out to Angkor, that was the year that Di was killed. I heard about the crash on the plane coming back, actually, so that's the year I went to Angkor. It's a big historic occasion. The chief guide that I told him about that, he said, how do you know all this stuff? And I said, well, look at the sculpture. He validated it. It's part of the deep history of the whole place. It's part of the aesthetic of Cambodia, what lies behind it. I'm not doing very well. Excuse me. So the film is this alternative. I go back as this character, my character, No Name Now. No, I'm trying to become No Name Now. So that's my role in the film. And he comes out from his lair in the cosmos, which is, in the film. But I don't want to. I didn't say that. No, this because it's a very sort of secret thing. But anyway, and I go out to Cambodia. Not really, but in my other reality, and of course, Khmer Rouge there, and I tell them all about these ideas because they talk about the anchor, the power source from Angkor. It's very central to that whole movement, actually. And they say, well, we've got to take this wonderful, incredible, but we're still going to kill you. And so they take me, but they do it in a ceremony in Angkor. The back of my skull, and bang, it's a bit of fuzzy. So this is the film, and at that same time, in now, I'm And this is all recorded. He saw lightning in front of him. He had good read for 2 weeks or sleep. It was a big victory. I use that as a portal to die through with Bernardich's blessing and come out. At that same time that I'm transported back in time historically, it's the virus. He becomes the virus. So that's the way that he spreads out, you know, kind of thing. And coming back in time from after Malevich, I actually end up at the Magic Mountain. Now, that's about 80 kilometres north of Angkor. And I haven't found this out, actually, but that's where the J. Alderman the Second hung out. And that's when, because Cambodia is Hindu, and then it sort of developed into Buddhism, you know, like the Bayon with all the faces on it. But before that, the Hindu stuff. Anyhow, this is the Hindu stuff. And the Magic Mountain was a big thing. So I stop off there. And this is Dudah. Adam's here against me. I mutate into No Name now. It's a generous offer of the author, actually, to bring me in on that. And the Khmer Rouge also welcoming, because it's like now in history, they've been programmed by the West to, because all what they're all quiet on, they're not going to start squealing out about that now, because, you know, the world opinion. Oh, go back to meeting Jane Fonda and coming out with all these ideas on Cambodia. She put the hand to the finger to her head, you know, screaming instead of around the twist or something, by thinking about the disappearing civilization, because she was all into the you know, the horrible bits of the Pol Pot and all that was going on in the news. But really, that was as a consequence of the American psychic meddling. I blame 100% on them, and that's why all that happened. It's nothing to do with what was going on. It was psychic meddling that disturbed a very delicate, you know, sort of way of sensibility, which, you know, Buddhist logic is, you know, incomprehensible certainly to a lot of Western people, and it's got its own pattern and everything, which you have to, you know, think to, you know, but it's sort of, you tend to self-implode rather than, you know, if you're feeling crazy or something like that, you don't kill everyone else. So your Oriental mind will more likely to commit suicide, but it's not it's sort of inwardly directed, the violence is not sort of progressive, so it's contained. And that was just a sort of an explosion of that into sort of 20th century awareness, and he brought it up to date. But yeah, blah, blah, blah. But so that's the Cambodian thing there. And the other thing was this camp thing. What's his name? Michelle is working on this idea of indexing to get a universal affirmative. This is what Kant's working on. Well, the famous essay by the subject of Ravitch, the world is objectlessness. So for him, there is potentially there's an object. Well, there isn't, you know, at every level that goes down a molecular to my new child, it's still with space there. And he would argue that you can only suggest an object, you can't state it. If you try to state it, it destroys the illusion, the words. You validate it. So it's through evocation rather than direct representation. And, I forgot what I'm talking about. Can you help me out?
Well, I wonder I wonder if you'd like to play your flute for a few minutes.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Speak soon.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you heard, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.